You may be seated. Thank you. We had some additional arrivals. I think maybe the students from Custer. Is that right? Okay. The second case up set for oral argument this morning is appeal number 30742, Ahmadi Mukhmadi versus City of Spearfish. Heather Lammers-Bogard is arguing on behalf of the appellant, Ms. Mukhmadi, and Cassidy Stowley is appearing, arguing on behalf of Appalachia City of Spearfish. Ms. Lammers-Bogard, you may proceed with your argument.
May it please the court, counsel, law clerks. I've decided through time that appearing in front of this court is an intimidating pleasure. It's even more so today because I live in Spearfish and I have for 22 years, and having this venue makes it even more intimidating. But I do appreciate that you took term of court out here and how you travel. We appreciate it for all these schools to get to see the hard work that you do. I know that the court is fully aware of the facts, but I thought for the benefit of the audience, I would briefly describe what happened to my client. And she goes by Hammy. Hammy and her son were on a run here in Spearfish on Dahl Road, and there's no sidewalk on that road, so she was running on the pavement, and a car was coming towards her, and so for her safety, she stepped off the pavement and intended to step into the grass to let the car pass. Unbeknownst to her, there was a culvert that was damaged in the grass and had a hole on the top of it. So not the side where the water drains out, but on top of the culvert was a hole with a jagged edge to it. And her foot slipped in there, and due to the jagged edge, caused a 5-centimeter laceration to her shin that was deep enough to cut a vein in her leg. As a result of her injury, she brought suit against the City of Spearfish, alleging wrongdoing, including the failure to inspect and maintain that culvert. The trial court granted summary judgment in favor of the City of Spearfish, and our brief shows, as well as I hope today, I can show for you the multiple grounds for reversing that summary judgment on de novo review.
So the circuit court granted summary judgment and determined both that there were no common law negligence claims, that those are barred under the Holm case, and then also determined that the facts didn't support a claim as a matter of law under 31-3210. Are you challenging the court's ruling about the common law negligence claim?
No, Your Honor, I understand.
So your claim is on appeal. What you're specifically challenging is the whether there's no evidence to support a claim under 31-3210.
It's my argument that there was a statutory duty on behalf of the city, and the trial court erred in holding summary judgment against my client under the statutory duty.
But not under common law.
Correct. I understand that the Godbee case held that there was no longer a common law duty. However, and I'll make a point in my brief, even though there's no common law duty, the city repeatedly admitted throughout this litigation, but even in their answer, that they had all sorts of different duties. But as to, I wanted to touch on the Godbee case, and of course it was written by Chief Justice Jensen. Under that case, it's a requirement that we now here in this case prove that there was damage to the culvert. And this is perhaps the most glaring error of the trial court when the court determined that there was no evidence to show damage. The trial court was advised as to the evidence supporting damage, but also as to the city's admissions of the damage. In fact, the city repeatedly and consistently admitted the culvert was damaged throughout this litigation. It wasn't until their reply brief to the trial court that the issue even came up about whether the culvert was damaged.
So is there anything in the record to indicate that the damage you're claiming is shown on the photos was pre-existing, you know, rather than caused by the incident with your client when she stepped on the culvert?
There's nothing in the record, Your Honor, to show that it had been pre-existing, except that you could see in the photo that it's an old, rusty culvert. And I don't think it's possible for my client, who probably weighs 110 pounds, could, with a tennis shoe, make a hole in a culvert. But beyond that, there is evidence. First of all, the city admitted in its answer that the culvert was uncapped and partially exposed, but discovery showed later that it was even more damaged. In an answer to the interrogatory, the city said, after being notified by my client, the culvert was inspected, the end was exposed, and the damaged portion was cut off. That was the city's answer to interrogatory.
And that was submitted as part of the summary judgment record.
Correct. And even beyond that, in a response to a request for production, the city produced an email that was written by a city employee. And that email said, quote, "It appears that the culvert has been damaged and has a split in the corrugated top section," end quote. But the email went on to say that my client's left foot slipped through the section and was pinned against the sharp edge, resulting in a severe cut to her shin.
And is that email on the record?
The email was read to the court during the hearing, Judge, but the answer to interrogatory is
right,
in the written.
Which all the interrogatory answers are not in, correct?
Correct.
And that email was not attached?
Correct.
You read it
at the
time of the oral hearing?
Yes.
Didn't submit it?
Right. Because, again, it wasn't until the reply brief that we were advised that there was any issue as to whether the culvert was damaged, because they repeatedly, it really just wasn't an issue. Even their first brief made no mention of it. But perhaps most importantly, the city's statement of undisputed material facts said nothing about there being no evidence to support that the culvert was damaged. In fact, they admitted in the statement of undisputed material facts that the culvert was left in the public right-of-way, uncapped and partially exposed. And I should explain that partially exposed is also an issue. Unlike most culverts that are covered by, you know, dirt, grass, or earth, this culvert, only half of it was covered, and it was enough grass where you couldn't really see it. And then the exposed portion is where the hole was. But even a case cited by the city in its brief at page 10, they admit that these kinds of admissions of fact are binding. And that kind of admission relieves us from having to prove that fact. But in addition to these admissions, again, the photos, they're not great, but their photos are evidence enough for a jury to consider, show the tall grass around it, show the jagged edge, and can show that it appears to be pre-existing.
Can you explain yes. why, in your view, there were disputed facts on the notice then? So even if we get past there was damage, disputed evidence at least on that?
Sure.
Can you address that, please?
Yes. So as to notice, actual notice is not required, and that's according to the Fitz v. Howard Township case, where it says that constructive notice is enough. The Fritz court held that it's a jury question whether the city should have discovered the hazard. And in that case, of course, it was a warning sign that had fallen down. And this court held there was adequate traffic in that area so that the city should have known that that sign fell down. Here, again, it's a jury question, but what we should be able to present to the jury is that the city conducted snow removal, but more importantly, weed control and mowing around the culvert. And so certainly, a jury could believe that the city could have discovered through the existence of reasonable diligence of those employees, that there was damage to that culvert. And we also cited to the case of Bow versus Healy, and I understand that's a landlord-tenant case, but there's a nice discussion on constructive notice. And this court held that there's an inference in the plaintiff's favor with respect to constructive notice when the hazard had been there for a long time. Here, we can show that it's possible that culvert was damaged for up to 20 years. It was installed in 1996, never referenced again, no inspection, nothing, and for 20 years when my client stepped in it and was injured. And again, viewing the facts most favorable to my client, which the court must do, a person weeding or mowing in that area would have discovered the culvert was damaged if they were exercising reasonable diligence. And again, it's a fact question. But I go back to the city admitted that it has a statutory duty. In its answer, they admitted various duties, the duty to maintain the culvert, keep the area safe, inspect the culvert, post warning signs. But beyond that, the city has admitted the statutory duty. In their statement of undisputed material facts, the city admitted that the culvert was installed and maintained by the city. In their brief at page 10 to this court, it shows they admit there's statutory liability that arises when the highway or culvert becomes out of repair. So then we look at, did the city meet their duties? The duties were under, first was SDCL 313210, saying that the city has a duty to erect guards and to make reasonably timely repairs upon notice that the culvert is damaged and causing a safety hazard. There's another statute, SDCL 31286, providing the city has a duty to erect warning signs at points of danger on highways. It's important that whether the city complied with those two statutes is a jury question. In fact, this court in Fritz versus Howard Township held, it reversed the trial court, holding that it was improper for that court to make that determination whether the city violated those same two statutes. And here, that's exactly what the court did. We should be permitted to present to the jury under SDCL 313210 that there were no guards around this culvert. It was certainly not repaired. The culvert could have been damaged for up to 20 years, as I mentioned, and they certainly never inspected the culvert during that time frame. There's no record of inspection, and they admit that.
So one of the issues you raise in your brief relates to the city failing to affirmatively plead immunity. You're saying the city waived its arguments on summary judgment by not raising immunity. I understand they affirmatively said, we're not raising immunity, we're not asserting that claim. I'm not sure I quite understand how that ties into the duty issue.
Well, it's a separate issue, Judge, and unfortunately the trial court didn't address it. But again, if you look at the city's answer to the complaint, immunity was not affirmatively pled. In fact, as I said, they admit all these various duties. But that's not.
But it sounds like that's not an issue on the table, is immunity, as I understand it from the city's response.
Well, what the city, is my understanding, what the city's brief claims is that they're not relying on sovereign immunity, but they're relying on South Dakota law that it was immune from suit based on owing no duty. But that's a distinction without a difference. Again, with them admitting the various duties, and they claim they don't have a duty under, or that it wasn't breached, sorry, under SDCL 313210, but this court has held that that statute's discretionary and thus protected by sovereign immunity. So in effect, they really are arguing immunity, but the purpose of affirmative defenses is to put the other party on notice, how to respond, how to rebut that. And the way they pled their answer certainly doesn't put my client in a position to understand what they're affirmatively pleading.
But as I understand your response at the outset to the Chief Justice's question, you're not really asserting any common law claims here. In any event, you're utilizing the statute that the home court recognized was the opportunity or was the avenue for liability. That's right.
Correct.
I have a question then related to that. So tell me about the theory of the negligent nuisance claim. Does that depend upon a common law basis for negligence? And if it does, how can that one survive Holm, or does it survive Holm, when the other common law ones seemingly do not?
Yeah, thank you, Justice Salter. This is also a very clear error on the part of the trial court, because the court held that my client can't show that the city was negligent, so we cannot proceed with a nuisance claim under SDCL 2110.1. However, that statute doesn't reference negligence at all. If you pare that statute down to what applies here, it says that a nuisance exists when the city doesn't perform a duty that injures another. And again, we have the one duty, SDCL 313210, that I've already discussed about erecting guards, making repairs, and then the other duty, SDCL 32286, to erect a warning. And obviously, the city failed to perform both of those duties. There's no evidence that they performed either of those.
So I want to be clear. So it sounds like you're asserting not a common law nuisance claim, but a statutory nuisance claim under, was it 2110.2, I think?
12.
One?
And actually both, Your
Two.
Honor.
Yeah.
Before I get to the common law nuisance claim.
Yeah, and you're out of time, so you just maybe answer the question.
Okay.
You can
Under Greer versus City of Lenox, there was legislative authority to maintain the public dump. And this court held that the authority is limited, the duty is limited by the exercise of authority in a reasonable manner. Here, they had the authority to maintain the culvert, and they did nothing at all. So that's unreasonable and negligent, which would support a claim for common law nuisance as well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Dolly, you can proceed with your argument.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Cassidy Stolly, and I am here today representing the City of Spearfish. The city respectfully asks that the court affirm the circuit court's grant of summary judgment because the circuit court correctly held that there was no common law right of action against the city for negligence. The city had no duty under 313210 because there was no evidence the culvert was damaged, let alone evidence of notice to the city of any purported damage.
What about the idea that you admitted, or the claim that the city admitted, that the culvert was damaged?
Certainly, Justice Salter.
It seems to loom large.
So I want to make sure that the record is clear here. When the city moved for summary judgment, it did so based on the common law duty, because prior to responding to summary judgment, the plaintiff had never mentioned or alleged a violation of SDCL 313210 or 31286 to put us on notice. There was nothing in her complaint. All she said was that the pipe was left uncapped and partially exposed. There was nothing in the response to discovery which explicitly asked her about a violation of a statute. The city, in a single sentence in its opening brief to the circuit court, noted that there was no violation of SDCL 313210. So Mahmoudi latched on to that sentence and then argued in her responsive brief that the culvert was damaged. And that's all she did, was argue that the culvert was damaged. She didn't say how it was damaged, what was damaged on it, what it looked like, just damaged. Today, Ms. Lammers-Bower got up and explained that there was a jagged edge. None of that was in any of the briefing before
but we've
the circuit
got to look,
court.
We've got to look at the record, not the arguments, right? I mean, so
yep.
So what was submitted, you filed a motion for summary judgment, said no common law duty, and referenced the statute as well, 31, 32, 10, and said no duty under that statute, no evidence of damage. And then maybe the argument wasn't well-developed, but, I mean, there's evidence in the record submitted in your own interrogatories where you say, hey, we cut off the damaged end after the incident and took it away. Doesn't that create a fact question on damage?
I respectfully disagree, because that evidence was of a subsequent remedial measure.
Is that appropriate at the summary judgment stage?
It is not, Justice Kern. The in Kendall v. Bosch and Loam, which is a District of South Dakota case, they address using Rule 407 evidence at the summary judgment stage. And that court said that you cannot rely on the possibility, because impeachment evidence is an exception to Rule 407, using subsequent remedial measures is an exception. But you cannot rely on the possibility of impeachment evidence to demonstrate that there is a dispute of fact. A party opposing summary judgment has to produce some evidence. This evidence of that the city went in after they were advised that the culvert was damaged and cut off the exposed end causes the circuit court and this court to speculate.
But the nature of an admission is that it relieves an opposing party of the obligation to furnish proof on a fact. So does that not apply? I mean, maybe that just applies at trial, but I guess I've never really thought about that. Is your argument then that doesn't apply at a Rule 56 motion proceeding? In other words, the admission can't really relieve them of a moving party, that is, of the requirement to come forward with affirmative evidence. The admission is out for that purpose?
I guess I wouldn't say it's out, but what we're looking at is a motion for summary judgment. The moving party has to be diligent in resisting summary judgment and providing...
The non-moving party.
Sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
No, you're fine. I'm just trying to figure out if... So if we know the obligation is, sort of resist this, raise fact questions and things like that, but if the nature of an admission is that it relieves somebody of the requirement that they would otherwise have to furnish proof, why wouldn't that apply now, here?
Because we don't know when it was damaged. Was it damaged when she stepped on it? Was it damaged 20 years ago? There's no proof that it was damaged at the time that this incident occurred.
Wouldn't that be a quintessential fact question, though?
It would be an essential fact, but the plaintiff didn't put it before the court. All the plaintiff put before the court was speculation, conjecture, and fantasy. There's no affidavit from the plaintiff saying, when I stepped in this, as they said today, that there was a gaping hole and a jagged edge. There's no affidavits put before the court. Certainly there was a photograph, which is actually upside down, and all it shows is an uncapped, unmarked, exposed culvert.
What about the nature of her injuries? Would that be evidence? You know, we view in a light most favorable to the non-moving party, would that be evidence that would show?
I think that again leads to speculation. Was it cut because she stepped on the side of a culvert, which could cut somebody's leg? There's no definitive, probative evidence that there was some sort of damage to this culvert.
Go ahead.
Well, is the standard we need definitive evidence at the summary judgment stage?
You need sufficient, probative, admissible evidence.
Okay, but I see sufficient as something different than definitive.
So it seems like some of your arguments are going more maybe to the question of notice. I mean, so, which I think might be a better argument for you than damage. Just my view. So look at the, when we think about notice and the city says, hey, we didn't know about this. We don't even know if it happened that day, all that sort of thing. Why do you win on notice, which is a damage and notice to the city, constructive notice, we've said. So tell us why you went on notice.
Certainly, Justice. So constructive notice requires actual notice of circumstances sufficient to put a prudent person upon inquiry and who omits to make such inquiry with reasonable diligence. Here, what has been asserted is that common sense dictates that the city employees mowing, weeding, and plowing should have noticed this alleged damaged culvert and ignored it. That's pure speculation, conjecture, and fantasy. There's no probative evidence to support that general assertion. Simply being in the area, mowing, weeding, and plowing without more is not enough to give rise to the circumstances sufficient to put this court on notice. In Fritz v. Howard v. Township, that court held that there was enough for constructive notice. In that court, there was far more circumstances that gave rise to the township to know. They had been alerted that there was a washout. They had went out and mounted signs and posted it in the center of the road. There was an affidavit submitted on summary judgment of a witness saying that they saw that those signs had been knocked down. The township clerk testified that she knew that there was heavy equipment coming in and out of that road and that it was possible that the signs could have been knocked down, and no one went out and checked.
Was there evidence that there was mowing or weed eating in this particular area around this culvert?
Yes, the city admitted in their answers that they mow and weed and plow around this area. But there's no other evidence. They didn't take any deposition of those employees. There's no affidavit or incident report or photographs or even somebody claiming that that mower, weed eater, or plow ran over the culvert and damaged it. Snow or ice backed up in it and caused it to crack. We have none of that circumstances that were in Fritz to give rise to the city to put them on notice. Notice that it's damaged, correct. And certainly this court has to draw all reasonable inferences in favor of the non-moving party, the plaintiff. But there has to be some evidence from which a favorable inference can be drawn. It can't be drawn from surmise, speculation, or conjecture. Today the plaintiff said that it's possible that it's damaged for 20 years. That's speculation. Moving to nuisance is defined as unlawfully doing an act or omitting to perform a duty, which endangers the safety of others or renders dangerous for passage any public street or highway. South Dakota law, though, specifically exempts statutory authorized actions or maintenance from being considered a nuisance. Under SDCL 945.3, every municipality, such as the City of Spearfish, has the power to construct and keep and repair their culverts and bridges. SDCL 313210, which we've been talking about, states that keep and repair duty is to warn of or repair a dangerous condition that the city had notice of.
So maybe the nuisance claim is an extension, and that's kind of what I was talking to Ms. Lammers-Bogart about. Maybe that's just an extension of the statutory claim. And I'll ask her on rebuttal. They have to win that one first before the nuisance one even comes into focus, regardless of whether it's licensed by statute or not. I don't know.
Certainly. I think I know where you're going, Justice Salter.
It seems like they derive from the same statute.
Yes, because what is allowed under South Dakota law is you can proceed on a nuisance claim when the negligent conduct is outside the realm of the statutory authority. So the statutory authority here is SDCL 313210. The plaintiff is alleging that this negligent conduct was the failure to maintain the culvert and the failure to inspect it. But there's no duty of the municipality to inspect. SDCL 311433 relates to townships. The City of Spearfish is not a township. And again, the duty to repair is under SDCL 313210, which requires damage and then notice. And again, there is no evidence of damage or that it was out of repair. This case is like Cooper v. Lincoln Union Electric Company. in which the negligence alleged was from some stray voltage. In that case, the court said that stray voltage is a byproduct of the transmission of electricity. It's a normal and natural condition. That's exactly what you have here, is a culvert. The only evidence before the court is that this culvert existed and she, the plaintiff, stepped in it. There's no evidence that the condition of the culvert violated any statute.
Well, if we're going to take reasonable inferences, and I'm looking at the discovery responses here, but if we're going to take reasonable inferences in favor of the non-moving party, and she says quite clearly, in the plaintiff does, in her responses, I was running, our car was coming, I moved off to the side of the road, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, but mm-hmm. I got injured because my foot landed in one of these culverts. And then, in fact, she's alleging that this had this very bad damage to this cut on her shin. Doesn't, if we take a reasonable inference from that, doesn't that sort of suggest that she's saying, I got injured because this culvert was damaged?
But she doesn't allege damage. In response to Statement of Undisputed Material Fact number 6, which says she stepped into a culvert, the plaintiff partially admitted that and said she stepped into an unmarked, uncapped, exposed culvert. She didn't say she stepped into an unmarked, uncapped, and damaged culvert with a jagged edge and a hole in the top.
Maybe the plaintiff didn't think that she had to because the city later admitted that it was damaged in any event. So is the city's theory that she damaged it?
We're saying that it was never damaged. There's no evidence of damage. And again, when
so
we
then
moved,
what is the damage that you're, what is the damage that, that's being referenced in the discovery responses and the email? What is that damage?
We don't know because we've never deposed any of those people. So that isn't before the court. All that's before the court is that they cut off a damaged portion. And again, we don't know, was it damaged before or was it damaged at the time of, or when she stepped in it? Did she cause the damage?
But it was damaged.
Apparently.
Okay.
My time is almost up, so I respectfully ask that the court affirm the circuit court's grant a summary judgment.
Thank you, Ms. Dolly.
Thank you.
Ms. Lammers-Bogart, you can proceed with rebuttal.
Thank you, Chief Justice. I want to point out, I guess at the onset, that every issue that's been discussed before this court is a fact question, according to settled South Dakota law. As with notice, again, we're at summary judgment. Will a jury believe there's constructive notice? I don't know, but I think we're entitled to find out. Under settled South Dakota law, constructive notice is enough. And the city admitted that they did weed work and mowed around the culvert. A jury should be able to determine whether that's enough to give constructive notice. And that's, again, based on their admissions. And viewing the facts in the light most favorable to my client, Hammy, it has to go forward. Summary judgment has to be reversed. And as to the admission with Justice Salter's discussion with counsel, an admission is an admission. And I'm honestly perplexed why we're still talking about whether there was damage to the culvert when the city 100% admitted there was damage to the culvert, which then put us in a position of believing we never had to prove it. They inspected it. They confirmed the damage. So I don't know why we'd be in the position to have to prove the damage.
It seems like their argument is that this was inadmissible subsequent remedial measure evidence because that was the context in which, well, I'm not sure I understand it, but In the court, I looked in the court's ruling, in the court, it's referring to a claim, but I don't really see that the court necessarily determined that would be inadmissible evidence or not. But what is your thought on that?
Yeah, correct, Justice Devaney. But also, the city's never argued that it was a subsequent remedial measure. And to the extent that we wouldn't be able to argue that, or they wouldn't eventually, I think is irrelevant to the fact that they admitted as a question of fact that they inspected the culvert and it was damaged. And I believe this came up earlier. My client went to the city, it was either that day or the next day, to indicate that I fell in this culvert, there's a hole in it, and that's why they went out to get it, inspect it, and then they, I guess the way they said it, cut off the damaged portion. But that would be the only one that relates to any subsequent remedial measure. Their email, you know, saying it appears the culvert has been damaged and has split in the corrugated top section. And then they describe my client's injury. Again, you know, it's a clear admission, but also question of fact. Every issue brought before this court is a question of fact that my client is entitled to have the jury address, not a court dismissing it on summary judgment.
And so in that subsequent remedial measure issue, really wasn't argued. I know the trial court addressed it in a ruling and said, hey, this evidence may not be admissible. And the court can do that on summary judgment and exclude evidence on summary judgment. But the parties probably didn't litigate that issue. And there appears to be exceptions in 407. Sometimes that evidence can come in. And in fact, the federal rule advisory notes indicate that may be admissible to show ownership, control, and existence of a duty. So maybe that issue still needs to be litigated down the road.
That's what I'm hoping for, Chief.
It seemed like a tough result, though, and sort of an imprudent rule if a defendant could fix damage, claim a subsequent remedial measure, and preempt the statute 32.35.10, which focuses on damage. So essentially neutralize any damage and then call it a subsequent remedial measure. That doesn't seem like a very sound rule.
I agree, and certainly I think we should have the opportunity to try and distinguish how a subsequent remedial measure would apply or not apply, and maybe even just a portion of their admission of damages come in and not what they fixed afterwards. But I wanted to, well, I was going to really quickly touch on gross negligence, but again, it's a jury question. I think the trial court misquoted the standard in Fisher v. City of Sioux Falls, and we're entitled to have a jury address gross negligence. The record's clear that my client's leg was severely injured because the city didn't do what the legislature directed them to do to maintain and repair the culvert. She's entitled to a jury trial and have the facts favorable to her on summary judgment, and we ask that the order for summary judgment be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments this morning. We'll be in recess for a few minutes.